You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com, and it's here Wednesday, December 27th. Holy crap, 2 days after Christmas. Hope everybody's recovered from their holiday festivities. Kim Grinnells is actually down in New Orleans, and he is going to be giving us all the scoop, all the latest and greatest, when Washington and Texas are preparing for this Sugar Bowl matchup, a battle of number two and number three in the college football playoff. Also here with Scott Eklund, who's also going to fill us in on some things with recruiting and whatnot. But, Kim, you got to set the scene for us, man. I know you get out there. I know you network. I know you've been talking to people. Give us the dope. Give us the juicy rumors. Give us all the stuff that you've been hearing down in New Orleans so far.
Well, you know, got in yesterday on the red eye, so I was pretty much just feeling beat up after doing a red eye and having the flight attendant telling me not to talk. But anyways, yeah, yesterday I was kind of a mess. We did the podcast anyways, and I was a little bit punch drunk, but got a good night's sleep last night and wandered out a little bit, went around the corner. For those who know New Orleans, went to the Ruby Slipper for breakfast. So took about a half hour wait to get in there. So it's just right around the corner. So it's close, convenient. And, you know, I eat because I have to. I have to have something in my stomach before I have the one cup of coffee I'm allowed. So I went to the Ruby Slipper, got that done. And just been talking to a lot of people down here. Sounds like most of the people aren't going to probably arrive. We're starting to get more people in today, expecting more in tomorrow. And it sounds like most of the people are going to be coming in on Friday. I know Softy will be coming in on Friday, and then he'll have his event on New Year's Eve down on Bourbon Street. So we'll make sure you guys catch up with that. But you take a look at the Washington media or people who were there for Washington arriving yesterday at the airport. And then you take a look at the crowd for Texas arriving today, and it was probably 4X. So more people coming in, and the Austin crews were coming in today, and maybe they just budgeted for coming into today and saving a night on the hotel room and not bothering with Washington come in. So we got that done today, and it was good to see Coach Sark. It was really, really, really good to see Coach Sark. He looks like he's doing fantastic. So got to see Coach Sark today. So,
well, but any rumors? Come on now.
Oh,
you're leaving us hanging. Come on, man.
Chris, you know what it's like when we start getting down south and we visit LSU and we played Alabama, and you start seeing some of these writers that, you know, the crusty old guys have been doing it for 50, 60 years, like Kirk McNair. You know the guys I'm talking about, the good old boy network. And boy, I found an old guy yesterday, and boy, he was spitting nails. So he says Jim Harbaugh is going to the Chargers. He said that Brian Kelly's going to go to Michigan. He said Kirby Smart's going to the NFL. Nick Saban, if he wins the national championship, is going to retire after the game. He said if he doesn't win the national championship, he's going to announce he's coming back for one more year to win it all, and he's going to use that to get as many recruits and guys out of the portal to be a part of Nick Saban's swan song year at Alabama and do it upright. So, you know, just some wild stuff, you know, floating around down here about the coaching carousel that could be coming up. So,
Is this guy's name, Kim? Does his last name rhyme with Pine Bomb?
No. I think this guy's twice the age of him.
Okay.
Well, I thought it might be, Brady Russell, his dad?
Pretty resolved. That's a deep hole.
Yeah,
there's definitely some old time reporters. This guy doesn't write. He writes about football once in a while. I guess he's writing about all kinds of different stuff. But he's just one of those good old boys with a cane and, you know, the beard and the scraggly hair. And like I said, you know, I'm sure back in the day he was a scotch and cigar guy. But some of those old time guys have been around the block for a long time, Chris. Those are some of the best dudes to sit next to.
Yeah, it sounds like you said, compared to last night when Washington got in to when Texas came in earlier this afternoon, it sounds like it's just part of the general recurring theme that a lot of people just aren't here for Washington compared to Texas, whether it's media, whether it's fans in general, whether it's just the idea that Washington almost comes in, even though they're the number two team in the country, it almost feels like they're kind of coming in as a bit of an afterthought.
Yeah, you know, that's just the way it is down here. You know, and I keep on telling people, you take a look at a population map, you know, and east of the Mississippi is where most of the population is, and that's where most of the media is. So the West Coast gets ignored quite a bit. And like I said, you know, how many of these people, you know, were people worried about the national pundits? And let's be honest, you two, how much of Washington football have those national pundits watched? I mean, some of these night, I mean, it starts too late. Most of them are in bed, you know, so, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about the national guys, but, you know, if they win, they'll definitely be on the minds of the people there. But I don't worry too much about the national guys. They just got to know a lot. They got to know a little bit about a lot of teams, and they don't know in depth like most of the fans of the teams do.
Well, Scott, I'm going to bring you in because it seems like, at least talking to the players and coaches this last week or so before they left Seattle to go down to New Orleans, it sure felt like that was a common theme, whether they take it as disrespect or motivation or any of that kind of stuff. It just feels like that's all part of the thing that they're dealing with right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a motivation for them. Like you said, Chris, each person has to, you know, use that in their own way. Most of them used it as just a, hey, you guys can keep doubting us all you want. We'll just keep proving you guys wrong. And that was what Mish Powell said. That's what Romo Odunze said. That's what Roger Rosengarten said. You know, just all those guys that we've transcribed and done interviews with and all that different stuff. It's always been the same. It's like everybody doubts that we're going to be able to do anything. And we're just here to, all we do is keep winning. We've won 13 games this year and we still don't get a lot of respect. And that's fine with us because it surprises everybody when we do.
Yeah. Well, and it does feel like, guys, just real quick, it does feel like that is happening. Like you hear some of the pundits and on some of the magazines or some of the radio stations or TV networks, and you start watching and listening to some of that stuff. And you do start to hear kind of this refrain of like, you know what? I thought Oregon was going to beat Washington the first time. I thought Oregon was going to beat Washington the second time. I thought they were going to trip up at some point. You look at those Arizona State games. You look at those Stanford games. You look at those close calls, the Apple Cup. You know what? Every time I thought that someone was going to beat Washington, it just didn't happen. So I can't in good conscience say that Texas is going to beat Washington this time, because every time I've said Washington's going to lose, they haven't lost. So I can't do that again.
It was interesting seeing Kalen DeBoer yesterday, because you guys have been around Kalen enough. And, you know, I would describe Kalen when he's dealing with us as pretty open, pretty relaxed, pretty carefree, just kind of relaxed. Yesterday I saw a different Kalen DeBoer. He was pretty intense and just didn't have that attitude, you know, he didn't have that light, easy feeling yesterday. It was a different Kalen DeBoer yesterday.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you spoke with Jamarcus Shepherd, if I remember correctly. And I think you even kind of remarked that he had his game face on that day. And it was, you know, we're talking about a day or two before Christmas. And he's like, yeah, let's go. If the game was played tomorrow, I'd be ready tomorrow. So I think there is a bit of a different slant or a different vibe about this game. And I think the team realizes it. I don't necessarily take that to mean that they've changed their preparation or they've, you know, added more importance to this game than a normal game. But I think they realize that it's just bigger than any other game they've played so far this year.
Yeah, they just seem to have a different mindset right now than they did earlier in the season. You know, I think it started with, you know, pretty much I would say the USC game, things started to change a little bit where they just knew, you know, that there was something bigger on the table, and it carried over into the Oregon State game and then carried over into the Oregon game, the championship game. And Scott, you've been around the players enough. They just seem like they're pretty locked in. They're not happy to be here. They're locked in.
Yeah, I mean, they're happy for the opportunity, but you're right, Kim. They are not taking this lightly. They understand this is an opportunity of a lifetime for them. Romo Odunze basically said it was a business trip that he was taking. And I think a lot of the guys are feeling that way. You got to remember, this is a very mature team. I think, what was the number that they were talking about on the Pac-12 championship game? Something like 12 to 15 guys that are currently on the roster had been there for 6 years. I mean, you're talking about guys who are 23, 24 years old, I think the
stat that I saw, Scott, and this should be credited to Tony Castricone. I think he said that there's 9 current Washington players in their 6th year. The rest of the other 3 teams combined in the playoff only have 3. And Alabama doesn't have any.
Yeah, maybe the number that they were talking about was guys in their 6th year. And not necessarily guys that have actually been on campus for 6 years, but I mean that is amazing when you think about it though. Yeah. And you're talking about guys like Eddie Ulofosio, you're talking about ZTF. McMillan and Romo Dunze got to Washington in 2020. So, you know, this is their 5th year or their 4th year in the program. So, you know, you just think about how experienced this team is. And I, you know, getting back to my original point was just how experienced this team is. I don't think they're awed by this. I think they believe they belong. And I think they believe that they can go out and win 2 games and no matter who they play. And I was going through this with somebody else and we were like, this is the first college football playoff that I can remember where you could make a really good argument for all 4 teams winning the national title. And so this is going to be one of the best college football playoffs we've ever seen. And it's going to be the last one with only 4 teams.
We've all been around long enough, and it just seems like every year a team has a motto that they go by, and they all do. Every year there's some kind of a thing that they try to wrap their season around. But after last year's 11-2 season coming into this year, Kalen DeBoer's been on a championship run, and he's talked to this team about being on a championship run, and we've heard it over and over and over. We're built for this. And I really think these guys have bought into that they deserve it. They're built for this. And that's why they found a way to win some of these games that, you know, in earlier years they would have lost. They believe. And it's such a cliche, you know, with the Ted Lasso thing, believe. I honestly believe this team believes they're built for this. They know how to do it and they can do it. And that's a huge thing, believing that you can do this.
And it's not just a platitude, right? It's not just a slogan or a word or something like that, because they've backed it up with a year's worth of action. I mean, look at all the single digit wins in terms of points scored, like the margin of victories and things like that. You know, the fact that they found a way to win on the road in absolute miserable conditions at Oregon State, to be able to kick a field goal at the very end to win that Apple Cup game when that game was in doubt. You know, both the Oregon games where people completely dismissed them and thought even though they were ranked ahead of Oregon in each game, they weren't considered a favorite, even at home in Seattle for the first game. It's just a constant theme. And so I think it is one of those things where you talk about these slogans and stuff, and some of that falls on deaf ears if you don't back that up with action. But you can't say that about this Washington team, because they've gone out and they've backed up every word that they've said with what they've done on the field.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like I said, it's interesting. They believe they can do this. We had a chance to talk to Carson Bruner yesterday and Devin Culp, and they seemed a little bit lighter than Coach DeBoer, but you could tell they were still incredibly focused as well. And, you know, the other thing, too, you know, I had a chance to talk to a couple of the Texas players today, and I don't think this has got a lot of attention, but these Texas players that played in that game last year, they remember the loss and they remember the hurt and they talked about it. Yeah, we remember it. And he goes, and I asked, I mean, everybody's got a chip on their shoulder, but it's a little bit more of a motivating factor right now for Texas. They lost to Washington. They want revenge.
Well, not just that, they lost in their home state. I mean, they lost in San Antonio, which, you know, for a Texas team, it doesn't matter if it's Texas, Texas A&M, Rice, SMU, Texas Tech, whoever you want to name. You don't want to be that Texas team that loses in your home state, because you're never going to live that down.
And Scott, when you take a look at that Texas defensive line, they not only have 2, they got 4 really good interior guys with Sweat and Murphy. But I was talking to one of the guys from Austin who covers the team, you know, and I talked about last year, because Chris, I know both of you looked at the game from last year. They weren't really that much of a factor, but he said, if you took those 2 players and look at the tape and the film and their performance and production last year to this year, he goes, they're not even this close to the same players.
Well, they shouldn't be. I mean, they should be there. You know, they're a year more experienced. They're, they're guys who can stuff the run. Now, one thing about Sweat is, I mean, at 306, what is he, 360, 365, whatever he is, yeah, you know, he's a large, large man. But, you know, he's not going to get you much in the way of pass rush. This isn't Vita Vea that's going to be running after you at 350 pounds and getting pass rush and stuffing the run and playing two gaps, all that. I mean, he's basically going to clog the middle and make it really hard for Washington to run anything inside. And then he's going to let the linebackers, you know, do their best to run free and make stops outside the guards and outside the tackles on Dylan Johnson and the other runners in the running game. So, you know, I mean, they're large men and they're going to be tough to move, but when I went back and watched, I've watched, three of their games so far. I've got a couple more that I really want to watch, games like Kansas State, where they, you know, allowed a lot of yardage, to a team that I mean, if I look at every team that Texas played this year in their season, there's not one that has a better offense than what Washington has. And Texas allowed a lot of yards. Now, they were able to overcome it and everything like that. And Pete Kwiatkowski, from when he was up at the University of Washington, we all know that he was kind of that bend but don't break. You'd rather, make a team have to go, 80 yards and 12 plays. And because the chances of them making a mistake are much higher than, you know, coming up close and challenging them and letting them get over top of you for a long, long gainer on you. So, and I think that's what, you know, they're going to do against Washington, is they're going to sit back in two deep zone and they're going to let Washington have their little dink and dunk and hope that Michael Penix gets frustrated, which at times he has this year. So, those big guys in the middle are big, but I think it's really the linebackers and the edge guys that Washington is really going to have to deal with.
Yeah, the guy from Austin said they don't get to talk to assistant coaches there in the entire year. They get them at the beginning of the year. They don't get assistants at all. And somebody asked about the pass rush against Washington in that game, and he said, "What pass rush?" So we'll see if that happens. But they seem to be pretty concerned about that secondary. And the only thing that might be a little concerning is we saw at the beginning of the year how they just seemed determined. Coach Grubb just seemed determined to get the run game going and was running into a brick wall the entire time. But I'll tell you right now, the Texas guys are really, the media guys anyways, are real leery of that secondary and Michael Penix torching it.
Well, that's okay. That's fair enough. And if you look at the numbers, yes, they're giving up about 240 some yards a game through the air. But if you really think about it, and you think about it the way that Scott just laid this thing out, Sweat and Murphy are in there to block the world from being able to run the ball. And so most teams have tried to throw the ball in a way where some of those, you know, plays have been really long handoffs. So you look at the 240 yards, that says one thing. But then if you look at it in yards per attempt, it's less than 7 yards per attempt. That's not indicative of a passing defense that's giving up 240 yards a game. That's indicative of a pass defense that's getting passed on a lot. You know what I mean? Like they're not, it's because they're basically not giving up anything on the ground. And so one of the questions I've been asked by the Texas media early on, as we're kind of both doing our prep work for this game, is, has Washington seen a rush defense quite like Texas in terms of what they provide in the middle and what they're going to see? Well, first of all, both Murphy and Sweat played, I think, at least 35 snaps in the Alamo Bowl. They had guys in front of them, upperclassmen, but they both played a bunch. And they, I think they both were graded out by Pro Football Focus over 70. So it's not like they didn't have a good game. They played well, but Washington was just able to find ways to beat them and not make them a big factor.
And if you think about it, Washington didn't have their second best running back either in that game.
Yeah, but and here's the other thing to think about too, guys. The entire middle of Washington's offensive line, it's completely different from what those guys saw last year. So while Washington would have seen Sweat and Murphy and some of those guys, you know, Fautanu and Rosengarten, they would have seen them. The interior of the line last year was Jackson Kirkland, Corey Luciano, and Henry Bainavalu. Well, now it's going to be Nate Kaleppo, Parker Brailsford, and Julius Bulow. And Bulow is the only one that played in the Alamo Bowl last year. And I think he played like 10, 12 snaps, something around there. So he didn't play a ton. And he played, I think, at left tackle, if I remember correctly. So, they're going to see a little different offensive line than the line they saw last year. And on top of it, they're going to be seeing the offensive line that won the Joe Moore Award for being the best offensive line in the country. Basically, as Scott Huff put it to you guys earlier this last week, it's the Heisman Trophy of offensive linemen. You know, you, if you win the Joe Moore Award, you've essentially won the Heisman Trophy for them. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. Like I said, you know, how many passes did Michael Penix throw on last year's game? Was it 54?
It's 50 something like that. Yeah, and he threw for 287, if I remember correctly.
And if you remember, he was like two of his first nine in that game. I mean, he had that one big play where they did the flea flicker on the very first play of the game for like what, 40 yards or whatever it was to Jalen Polk. But after that, he didn't do anything until midway through the second quarter.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Wayne Talapapa had 100 yards on the ground.
Yep.
So one of the big keys is if Dylan Johnson, it's one of the benchmarks, right? If Dylan Johnson gets over 100 yards like he did against Oregon both games, that bodes well for Washington being able to not only establish some things, but also keep the offense on the field, move the chains, you know, execute on third down, and especially execute in the red zone. Because one of the things that does it has become a problem for Texas is being able to execute in the red zone. They're not great. They do not have great efficiency in the red zone. So if Washington can hold them to field goals instead of touchdowns, and Washington scoring touchdowns on their end, that could end up being a big thing too.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting because I just, you know, the last few bowl games we've been to, you know, there was just a lot of afterthought, and I hate to use this word, but, you know, just people were dismissive and not a lot of respect there, you know, because, you know, Alabama football is different and Texas football is different. But, you know, the people down here, they seem to have a lot of respect for Washington, more so than I've seen in quite some time.
I was going to say, Kim, anything else that you gleaned from the press conference and the arrival today from Texas that we may not see? Like, because I know later we're going to have the transcript of Steve Sarkisian talking. We're going to have the arrival. We'll have the video and all that stuff. But were there some things maybe on the side, either talking to some of their players or something like that you may have gleaned some insight there?
No, I mean, Steve looked, you know, I mean, Sark is Sark. I mean, I got to talk to him a little bit off to the side, and, you know, he said, make sure and tell, you know, Fetters and Eklund hello. I believe he's remarried. So his wife, I'm pretty sure that was his wife, was there.
He is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, the guys down there, I mean, Sark was pretty open with us when he was here. You know, the guys down there say, you know, they hardly get to talk to him at all. And he's just real kind of, he says arm's length. He didn't say standoffish. He's always professional. He's always good. But, you know, just maybe some of the stuff he's been through has just made him kind of at arm's length. And they said, you know, it's just pretty typical with the big programs that you see. So, nothing really. I think the biggest thing I took from today was just the players, you know, where they were mentioned about the loss last year. So I think that's front and center. They remember it, and that's kind of their motivation. You know, every team seems to need to have a motivation, and that seems to be theirs.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I was just curious, too. we were talking a little bit before we got on the air about scheduling. Can you give people a little bit more of insight onto what the media schedule is going to be like the rest of this week leading into the game?
God, I just put it away. I'm trying to find it again. But we have defensive coordinators and defensive players for Texas tomorrow morning. Then tomorrow afternoon, we have the Washington defensive coordinators as well as players, too.
I think tomorrow being Thursday.
Yeah.
The 28th.
So I think it's – I'd have to take a look, but I think it's Saturday where we go to the Superdome and we have access to everybody. So you remember being down at Alabama, Chris, when we had that thing at the stadium where we could pretty much go up to anybody? It sounds like that's what they're going to do. So we can just talk to anybody we want. So I told Scott this yesterday. I don't know if you listened to the podcast. Who's the first player you think I'm going to go after, Chris? Who's the first player I'm going to approach?
Well, I have no idea. Curly Reed.
Well, he's second.
No, okay. The Chuck Norris of Husky football.
The Chuck Norris of Husky football? Oh, that would be Zach Durfee.
I'm going to go find Zach Durfee, see if they'll let him talk to me. So I'll see if I can get Zach Durfee or, you know, if he's really Bigfoot, does he exist? It'd be funny if I went to a table where they had his name on it, but they just had his jersey and he wasn't there.
Well, so. in talking to the coaches, as you guys know this week, they've made no secret of the fact that they're practicing with him. They're thinking about using him. So it's not exactly like it's not a household secret. You know, it's not something they're trying to keep under wraps.
Yeah. So I'll plan on trying to get a hold of him as well as Curly Reed. He's from down here, but where he's at, that's about 3 hours away. So it's not like it's real close. So Curly Reed from down, I can't remember the name of the city. He's in Louisiana. You've talked to Curly before, haven't you, Scott?
Yeah, like twice. he was not easy to get a hold of, he's a good kid, really smart. Went to I don't want to say a prep school, but went to one of their I think it's a charter school down there or something. They have some weird things going on down there with the school systems and how they set up their schools and like parishes and all that different stuff. So you know, for the, you know, their parishes, not counties, all that different stuff. So, you know, they do some different stuff down there, but yeah, he's good kid. I'm sure he's going to be an interesting kid to talk to, even though he's not really planned. So I don't know if they'll even make him available.
So just to make sure people know, he's from Lake Charles, Louisiana, and went to Lake Charles College Prep.
Okay. That's what
according to the official roster.
Yeah, so we get a chance to talk to guys that we haven't been able to talk to all year, so I'm not going to waste my time talking to guys that I've talked to all year, so I'll go see if I can find Bigfoot, otherwise known as Zach Durfee. Anybody else I should get a hold of?
Well, I think a lot of people would probably be very curious to see how some of the redshirting guys are doing, like a Curly Reed or some of these other players, maybe some of the ones that were on the fringe that played a little bit this year but were able to maintain their redshirts, like maybe like a Devin Bryant or like a Rasheed Williams, Keith Reynolds, you know, maybe some of those kind of guys. I mean,
third on my list is Austin Mack.
Yeah, well, for sure everyone wants to hear from Austin Mack. That's a good one.
By the way, just sun's going down here in New Orleans and looking out my window. I'm going to put this up on Twitter. Sky's on fire. Beautiful, beautiful view out the window.
Hey, Scott, want to get back to you real quick. I know there's going to be a couple of recruiting items that people are very curious about still. There's a couple of portal transfers that have verbally committed to Washington. One of them is the edge player from Arizona State, and the other one is a tight end from Fresno State. Do you want to give us an update on those guys?
Yeah, neither one of them have signed their financial papers, but both have told me that they're planning to enroll at the you know, on the second when classes start at the University of Washington. So we'll have to wait and see. On them, Trey Watson is the tight end from Fresno State. He's going to be an immediate impact guy for Washington. I think all the portal guys are going to be impact guys, but he's going to have an immediate impact on Washington's tight end room. I said in my blog the other day, and I'll have an impact story up at some point, but we're kind of focused on the Sugar Bowl right now. But I'll have an impact story up on Watson soon, and I just think he's going to be. in there with Joshua Cuevas and Quentin Moore as your top three tight ends in Washington's system this year, in 2024, that is. And then the other guy is B.J. Green, an edge guy out of a versatile guy, but he can play edge or inside, depending on how you want to use him. But he's from Arizona State. Arguably their best defender this year. And right now, Arizona State is on the semester system. And when you try to transfer between semester schools and quarter schools, which is what Washington is, you can have some transcript issues. So Washington has a little bit on of a transcript issue with BJ Green that they're trying to work through. But I did talk to him. And he said, I'm a man of my word. I committed to Washington. That's where I want to be. And I'm planning to be up there on January 2nd. So all we can do is go by what the kid says right now.
And because I know you are on all of it, I'm going to throw you not so much a huge curveball, but a little bit of a curveball here. On December 22nd, Washington also received a verbal commitment from a preferred walk-on player from Lake Ridge High School in Lake Oswego, Oregon, by the name of Luke Womack.
Yep.
Can you tell people a little bit about Luke Womack?
Yeah, 6'4", 195 pounds, and played both sides for Lake Oswego last year. And he's coming in as Lake Ridge, down there. And he's going to come in as a safety for Washington. And it's a nice pickup. Basically, Washington said, we don't have enough scholarships for you this year, but all of our, you know, they didn't say all, but they said a lot of their scholars or their walk-on guys end up on scholarship if they can come in and contribute, and they think he can. So take it for what it's worth. You know, he's pretty excited about it, excited that his parents will be able to drive up and see him play anytime. They'll be able to come up and watch him practice and all those kind of things. So very excited to be a Husky.
And it looks like they must see a little bit of Tristan Dunn in a guy like
Luke. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I thought of that, although he's heavier than Tristan Dunn was at this point in his life. You know, Tristan Dunn coming out of high school was about 6'4", 170 pounds.
Yeah. But one of the things that they talked about, Scott, as you know, the long levers, right?
Yeah.
And when you find a safety that wants to come in and play defense, it's legitimately 6'4". Yeah. It's hard not to agree with that a little bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he's got great ball skills, and he sees himself as a downhill safety. I said, you know, I'm watching your film and I'm looking at a ball hawk, and he goes, well, I'm a ball hawk safety who can come and play downhill and support the run. So, he says he can do it all. And if that's the case, then he'll be on scholarship sooner than later.
I was going to say, what's not to like about that description?
Yeah. So 6'4", 195 pounds, he'll play at about 205, 210.
There you go. And we'll finish up this podcast, today's podcast. We're going to try to do one every single day, but we're going to finish this one up, Kim, with a little bit of the basketball stuff. I mean, basketball is a little bit on the back burner right now, but Washington finished their non-conference slate 8-3. They've got two games on the road to start their final Pac-12 season forever, ever, and ever at Colorado on the 29th, which is Friday. And then they'll play Sunday afternoon, the 31st, a New Year's Eve at, 3 o'clock Pacific time at Utah. So don't know if you want anything more to add to that, but, you know, I think Washington fans, even though football is the priority right now, I think basketball is certainly intriguing to watch.
Yeah. After the last win, you know, it was almost a week ago, I think that, you know, they would have liked to have gotten right back on the horse and had another game, but they got a couple guys that just needed a little bit of extra time with Frank Kapnong. He's going to be fine. Coach Hopp said he could have played last time. They just wanted to be extra careful with him and the knee. And then talking to them this week, they said Frank was really scared. He thought he messed up his knee again, but it should be fine. But during that game, Chris, I don't know if you remember, but when he went down, he was probably only about 20 feet from me. And he took his hand and he slammed the floor, and the damn whole floor vibrated. He's a big, strong dude. So a little bit of extra time for Frank is not going to be a bad thing either. And then Paul McKay, he hasn't been the same. He broke his two fingers on his left hand. So that's been a little bit of a problem. So getting him a little bit of time off, probably have a little bit more time for those to heal. I guess, you know, he had the choice to take, you know, 3 to 4 weeks off and let that thing completely heal or play through it. And he's deciding to play through it. So we start conference play, which is going to be big. So Colorado and Utah are both really, really, really good teams. So we'll see what happens. You know, they need to get to 20-21 wins. So we'll see what happens.
So at 8-3, you're saying they've got to go, what, 12-8 12 in conference?
Yeah, they need to go 12-8 at minimum. At minimum.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you think that's doable?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they're deep. I mean, they got the three bigs that they can play. They got that three-headed monster. They've, you know, Corin Johnson playing real well. Xavier Wheeler, if they can get Paul McKay playing back like he was. I think Moses Wood is starting to heat back up and getting that shooter. And you're not seeing a lot of, but boy, I really like what Anthony Holland brings to the team. He doesn't, you know, fill the stat sheet, but boy, he's a clutch shooter. And I mean, I don't know what his percentage is on three-point shots, but I think he's shooting them pretty well. They put him in on that. On defensive assignments towards the end of the game when they go offense defense because they really trust him and they've got him rested. So I think Anthony Holland is a big player for this team. And when they get Wesley Yates back, when they get him back and then he gets going, guys have been telling me he was the best player on the court before he got hurt. So they got some weapons coming back. So we'll see what that brings.
So assuming that they win all their games at home, you still have to win – what, three games on the road? Who are the three teams? Now, the one team they don't play is USC on the road.
Yeah, they got to beat the teams that they're supposed to beat and then, you know, beat some of the, you know, have some other wins in there too. They need to beat these road teams. I mean, if they could go 2-0 and beat Colorado and Utah, that would be huge. A split would be fine too, but they've got to beat, you know, Colorado. They've got to finish fourth minimum, probably fourth, you know, and possibly fifth in the conference, somewhere in there. But, you know, the conference is good. You know, they got to beat Cal, Stanford. They got to beat those guys twice. Washington State, they've got to beat twice. So there's six wins that they really need to win. And then they've got to find those six wins elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm looking, you know, they've got a three-game stretch in the middle of this thing in January where they've got to go at UCLA, at Cal, and at Stanford back-to-back-to-back, like Sunday, Thursday, Saturday. What kind of scheduling is that?
I told you. The secretaries make the schedule, Chris.
That's crazy. Although, you know, like I said, you know, getting splits on the road is going to be crucial this year. But if they could go 2-0 against Cal and Stanford, they get 2-0 on that Bay Area trip, that would be absolutely immense. That would be immense.
Yeah, you know, if they can beat these teams at home and then, you know, get, you know, sweep those teams and then split on the roads, you know, with some of these other teams, maybe get a home win against Arizona, maybe get a home win against UCLA, who seems to be struggling a little bit. And, you know, we'll see what happens. We will see what happens.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up with that. I think we've talked a little bit about everything so far that we need to kind of getting up to speed on what's going on in the Big Easy. But do you have any final thoughts, Kim, on anything that's going on there? Anything else you want to add?
No, it just seems to be ramping up down here. You know, yesterday was kind of slow, not a lot of media, a lot more in today, expecting more in tomorrow, expecting more in again on Friday. You know, like I said, I didn't do much yesterday, so I'm going to head out and grab a bite, and then I'll try to put something up a little bit later tonight, you know, just thoughts of what's going on. And I've still got people I'm texting, and I got phone calls coming in, doing a lot of networking, so I'll try to get something up a little bit later. And, you know, I've been out to breakfast twice. You know, you guys know me. You know I don't eat much, and I just look at the plates they give me, and I just wanted for one. Do you have a kids menu? I might be ordering off the kids menu tonight if that's the way they're going to serve their meals down here.
Sounds like a tough life, Kim. I wish you the best.
You guys know me. I go crazy because I don't eat food. I mean, I don't eat much. So when they give me a plate, I don't eat that much in a week. So anyways, life's rough. Well,
on that gastronomical note, we will leave it there. So for Scott Eklund and Kim Grenos, who's down in New Orleans having a tough time trying to find something to eat, this is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Be Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sanfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.